I guess 15 minutes.
Full on ninja.
So was this set up as a with a sequel coming up? I guess the movie kind of leaves you wondering what happens next.
I want a sequel. I want Jaimin and Peña to be devil hunters in part two.
And then
we ramp up the action a little bit. That'd be great, you know. Yeah. I love the movie. If it works and the audience enjoys it too, then that's the plan. That's what we're going to do, is do a part two.
Cool. Why direct this film solo?
Say again, sorry.
Directing this one solo.
Oh, okay. Brian and I, we wanted to kind of go off and do a couple things on our own. You know, of course, we're working on Crank 3, and we're going to hopefully do that next year. But in the meantime, we always want to kind of do our own thing. You know, Brian, our tastes are different, and they're similar when they come to crazy high-octane action movies, and that's where we'll kind of always do stuff together. But it was a chance for us to, like, stretch our muscles and do some different things. And we've always had, like, these little projects that we've always, each of us have wanted to do. And we were kind of like, hey, why don't you do that for a little bit, and I'll do that for a little bit. And kind of, it was perfect timing for us, and that's why we did it.
So, you know, like Mark Neville Dean and Brian Taylor and Neville Dean / Taylor are three completely different.
They are. Well, I mean, and they are three people, you know. They are kind of three entities, and you know, we're both guys with families. I have two kids now. Brian has a kid. And schedules aren't always as easy as you think. And it was a lot easier when we were both younger and we didn't, you know, have as much going on in that realm, in the personal realm.
Now, movies like this, it's kind of hard because there have been thousands before about, you know, exorcism and stigmata. So how do you make sure that this movie, you know, separates itself from the others?
The only thing that I did was I just kind of told it from my point of view. I grew up as a kid that went to Catholic school my whole life, and there were things that sort of freaked me out and terrified me. And I thought I'd put those elements in this movie. I also thought it was cool that we did it PG-13 because it was an incredible challenge for me to not just go for the gore and go for the easy jump out of your seat moments. I really wanted to sort of build attention slowly in this movie. I had to get off rollerblades and put the camera on a tripod. So that, you know, it was nice for me to kind of stretch my muscles and do something differently. But I really enjoyed the pace of this movie, and I enjoyed working on performances in this movie. For the first time I ever had the opportunity to do rehearsals with the lead actors. We had a couple of weeks, and I had a chance to work with everybody, and that was really special. It was really, you know, you start to work on their character arcs and those little beats, and you get to block the scene before you're just there on the day. I'm so used to, like, blocking the scene, just grabbing a handheld camera and shooting it. You know, we were able to design this, and Jerry Fleming, the production designer, was actually able to build that bedroom based on the way we were blocking the scenes. It's unheard of, but it helped, you know, and we were on this was the shortest schedule that I've ever directed a movie on, in the smallest budget, so we had to be really smart about our plan.
There was one thing I noticed, compared to a lot of films like this, where the female lead who is possessed is usually over-sexual, and
I wasn't interested in that.
Yeah.
It's the easy thing to go to, and I'm sure that some of my audience is expecting that, but what they'll get is an absolutely beautiful girl that gives an incredible performance, and they'll be, you know, excited by that. But I wasn't interested in exploiting sex in an exorcism movie, and I wasn't interested in bashing the church in an exorcism movie. Those things I just didn't want to do. Those felt like too easy to do. What I wanted was to create a slice of life possession movie and make something really naturalistic, because I believe in possession. So I've been possessed most of my life.
sort of as a follow-up to that question, because possession movies are such a specific subgenre of horror, were there other, I guess, tropes that you found yourself maybe gravitating toward but then having to pull yourself back, like, no, let's actually not do that?
It's interesting because I've kind of crushed genres together before, and I, you know, pathology, people are like, what is it? Is it horror, medical thriller, these things? Yeah, I think the way for me to answer this is I just do it from my point of view. You know, I just I tried to make things freaky that were freaky to me, and kind of tell my story. And I use the blueprints of Chris Borelli's great script. What's interesting is this was a found footage movie. The script was. Ooh. Okay. And when Lakeshore brought it to me, they said, we love this idea. We think it's a fresh take on possession films, but we don't want it to be found footage. So we need to rework it and make it a cinematic movie and not a found footage movie. So it's actually the first time I've ever been involved with a production that took a found footage movie and did it the other way. I've been involved with productions that said, we have no money. Let's just take this great script and turn it into a found footage movie because we have no money. So that was a really cool challenge, you know, for me.
Story-wise, with Angela, this is the part that is going through my mind. Is it weird? Spoiler alerts. Is it weird? When she's at the end and she begs to be killed, is that her innocence coming back?
That's right.
The innocence of the character coming back and saying, "This is Angela here." Trying to say to convince to them,
yep.
Or is it more?
You just
like,
gave me chills because yeah. That was something that we designed and we didn't want to be over the top with, but we thought was a really powerful element was that she was willing to sacrifice herself. And there's a lot of anti things going in the sort of Antichrist film that we were trying to achieve. But that was her moment, you know, and that was their moment that they missed. And of course, then. Things rise and
yeah, I felt it was
happen.
Like the killing the baby Hitler yeah. kind of thing. Like, would you do it? And like, I don't know. Yeah.
It's a baby still.
It opens you up to part two.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, if I may, you said you grew up in the Catholic school, right? You said,
yes.
So, can you talk a bit about what's the fascination with Catholic and then possession exorcism? I mean, the Vatican themselves, would they admit that they still do these things or?
Sure. I mean, the Vatican does admit that they perform exorcisms, and Pope Francis is involved in exorcisms. I think the reason why, you know, I don't know, people of, you know, that believe in religion and that are, that have faith, we're interested in this because we do believe in things like possession. We believe that, you know, the tragic events that are happening around the world, there's something more to that. Those are not random acts of violence. I think we're afraid to look at the truth. That there's something coming, there's something underneath this. And, you know, when you grew up with religion in the Catholic Church, you know, we truly believe in God and we believe in the devil, we believe in the Holy Spirit. And these things for a young child growing up also creates an incredible imagination.
And you add a Latin country to that.
That's right. And you bring in all those different elements and it's incredible and it's fun, but you know what I find interesting is the people that get sort of the most terrified of horror films are the skeptics. You know, that's what's interesting to me.
I like the opening montage that you have in the film. Did you shoot that yourself, or was it you going through like archive footage?
Sure, what we did, we started off with sort of archive footage, and we cut a montage together to music, and we wanted to sort of make something that told people, get ready for this movie. And then, of course, we went and we shot some separate elements and, you know, licensed some different footage. So, you know, the original version, we couldn't show you because we couldn't license half the footage. But we were able, and I'm really happy with this, we were able to get an approved photo from the Vatican licensed of Pope Francis in our movie. So, and that's not easy. So Pope Francis is in the Vatican tapes.
I didn't get the name. Who was your cinematographer? Because the lighting was really
Matteo Madrazzo. Matteo's one of the best lighters that I've ever met. I actually worked as an assistant camera. I was a grip. I was a gaffer for Matteo back in 2000-2001. So I worked for him, and I've always threatened him that he was going to work for me one time. And now we've done a couple films together that he's DP'd, things that I've produced, and obviously the Vatican tapes. But he's an incredible lighter, and he's so meticulous, and he's a perfectionist. And really helped sort of change my game and change my style and allowed me to just step away from some of the saturated colors and things that I've done in Crank and Gamer and do something different. He helped me create that palette. So thank you to Matteo.
Is there an homage to the birds here? Because I was like watching Hitchcock.
We've all talked about it, and of course it's, you know, maybe it's in the front of our minds or in the back of our minds, but it wasn't an homage, but certainly we we're all discussing it constantly. And I heard that they're doing a remake of Birds 2 right now.
Yeah.
With the setting, I thought it was very interesting to have the Vatican and Rome identified, but there was an identification with Los Angeles. I keyed on it when I saw the bus scene, and I'm like, wait, this is Los Angeles.
There was a, you know, I had this crazy idea that, you know, spoiler alert, that the Antichrist would rise in the hipster area of Silver Lake. And
you were Silver Lake or Highland Park.
Yeah. and I didn't want to shy away from Los Angeles, but at the same time, we were like, we don't need to go over the top, we don't need the Hollywood sign, we don't need to hit the Sunset Strip. But it's interesting, it's the Vatican. We actually had a second unit shoot the Vatican. Now you're making me second guess. Maybe we should have put a bunch of subtitles. Boom, Los Angeles.
No, I could see California. It, but I was just like, you know, wait, you know. To I mean the idea of the City of Angels
that's
rising in that, that's pretty interesting.
Angela and the City of Angels was very important to us, and you know, the unholy spirit in the Raven was important to us, and we wanted to flip a lot of those things on their head. That was a design originally from the screenwriters, and then I tried to build off of that.
Did you have your actors, for example, Michael Peña, to shadow a priest, or how did you prepare your Olivia?
I did give them, all homework, you know, and they were great students. They all dove into whether it was the internet and did research, and they all watched, you know, possession films and horror films and just films that they loved. And again, I got a chance to rehearse with them and break the scenes down and do acting exercises and freak each other out, scare each other. And there are times where Olivia, and this happened in her audition too, I literally saw her eyes twitch and change in the audition. She has something about her that, and when I saw it, I was about 20, 30 seconds into her audition, I knew right there, I turned to Gary Lucchese and I said, this is our girl. And she has such a level of commitment that she truly believes right now, and believed when she was working on this movie, she was possessed. She really brought it in. She really had to go there, you know, in that moment. It's not like maybe right now she's like, well, you know, but she in the moment was so method that she was possessed. And we had her chained to a wall 4 out of the 8 days that we're in the bedroom. You know, and she wanted that, but she had breakdowns. I don't know if you've spoke to her yet, but she broke down a couple of days. And while she's chained to the wall, and it was hard to undo those chains, so she's laying on the floor crying, and Dougray Scott is over there comforting her, and John Amadori, and I was thinking, okay, I said, Olivia, do we need to take a break? And she's like, no, I want to just stay in it. And I'm glad she said that, because I didn't want to let her out of the chains, and I wanted to keep her in it, because I know that was best for the film. Well, and maybe I'm the devil, I don't know.
Well, does your background as, you know, working on action films make you more comfortable with, you know, throwing your actors around, and how game
You're right, and it does. I mean, I put them on harnesses. I threw guys against the wall. It was very violent, that end scene. One of our stunt guys, you know, hit his head pretty hard. We had to take him to the hospital, and I certainly don't want to ever put anybody in peril, but I want things to be in camera. I want people to see that these things are really happening. And you're right. I guess I, because of the films I've done and all the action I've done, because I am on rollerblades hanging on to cars, I think, oh, if I'm hanging on to a car, this girl can hit the floor hard, right? So, note taken. Thank you. I'll think about that next time.
But of course, you have to have that warning that no animals were harmed.
Yes, yes. You know, the bird wasn't harmed. You know, well, the birds that I didn't eat hurt weren't harmed. You know, the other ones I ate, and they were good, because, you know, I always say if you kill an animal, you must eat it and say a prayer over the animal.
Did your wife, by any chance, have any advice?
My wife always has advice. She's really incredibly supportive of what I do, and it was great because she sort of taught me how to talk to actors. And I had done some acting in my past, and I'd done some stage directing, and I've written and directed plays, but I've never really tackled the task of getting into an actor's head or making them feel incredibly comfortable in these vulnerable situations. And so she was really good about explaining to me to just be very truthful and be very supportive of Olivia going through this experience, because she's going to need all the help she can get. you know.
Especially since she did a big supernatural film herself.
Yes, yeah, drag me to hell. Yeah. Now she's a supernatural mom because she's incredible.
So when is the sequel going to happen? When is the Vatican Tales?
We'll see. I mean, I think hopefully soon. Hopefully we get this out to the movie theaters and it's a giant hit, and then we go right into it. It'd be great. Again, I would absolutely love to have Jaime and Pena be in a badass devil hunting movie. I think it'd be incredible.
Got any other genres that you're interested in mashing up, as you said?
Oh gosh, I mean, everything. I mean, I want Chev to fight, you know, the girls from Pitch Perfect. So, I mean, seriously, like, I would love to do stuff like that. You know, I think that would be really fun and off the wall. Oh, sorry, guys.
Switch it up now. Here.
Yeah, great.
Good.
Well, is Jason and Amy coming back?
For Crank 3, that's the plan right now.
The plan right now, but they're not sealed yet.
Yes. No one's sealed, but the idea is that we want to bring the original band back together.
All right. Thank you.
And finish the trilogy.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.